Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
We got a big show tonight. We have a big, massive show. It is going to be an endeavor. I'm really excited. I'm Josh Eberle. As always, I'm your host on Monday night, except for today it's Tuesday. We moved it. I've got Will Reed from the All Weather Fan podcast on with me. Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm happy to be on.
Thanks for coming on. I appreciate it. Thank you for working with me. We would normally have the show on Monday. We are doing it Tuesday tonight, special Tuesday edition.
I'm always available to talk hoops. I'm always available, bro.
I feel the same way. What else are we doing? There's all this baseball chatter on Twitter right now. It's driving me nuts. I'm so glad we have this outlet. First thing I got to ask you, Will, we've had a busy offseason. It's been crazy. It's been hectic. Everybody's making moves. Who's the winner? Who's your big winner? Who's your big loser?
You cannot look at a winner and a loser without picking the San Antonio Spurs as a winner for one reason only. Greg Popovich is the best coach in basketball, in my opinion, and he takes David Robinson to Tim Duncan, now to LaMarcus Aldridge. And Timmy's still there to go ahead and guide LaMarcus Aldridge as they move into this next era. So you cannot look at anybody and say that nobody did a better job than the Spurs, because now they are perpetuating a dynasty, the best dynasty that we've seen in modern hoops history. So absolutely the Spurs are your winners. There's no question about that. Now, losers, I mean, you could throw all kinds of losers. My heart's broken as a Lakers fan. You know, we swung and missed on everybody. I mean, Kevin Love didn't even come and talk to us because we prioritized LaMarcus Aldridge over him. We got no free agents, but that might be a little bit of a blessing in disguise. I don't want to say they're my biggest loser, because I think that to win, you have to build through the draft, and that's what the Lakers did through 95 through 98, and that's what they're going to need to do moving forward. So we're 2 or 3 years away. I'm going to say my biggest loser is going to be the Charlotte Hornets. When you pick up Frank Kaminsky, and you have all of these other guys on the table, and as you mentioned on the podcast, on my podcast a couple of weeks ago, they had all these deals packaged, and people were just laying it at their feet saying, let me get that pick, and you go ahead and you take Frank Kaminsky. You know, I love Frank. He's a super guy. He seems like a really nice guy, but he is not going to be able to guard athletic stretch fours. That means he's not going to be able to give you more than 30 minutes. Huge, huge, huge mistake by the Charlotte Hornets, and that move alone in the draft, in my opinion, makes them my biggest loser.
Hard to argue with either of those picks. I think the Spurs, we could talk about the Spurs all day and how great they've been run, how much success they've had. I think you just said the modern version of a dynasty in the NBA. But when a guy opts out of a $12 million deal and comes over for the vet minimum across conferences, and everyone knows it's tougher to win in the West, just for a shot at the title, you have that much faith in an organization you've never been a part of. I think it speaks volumes to not just this offseason, but how they are perceived as winners far beyond this offseason and have been for over a decade. I know you're a Lakers guy. I know you're not pleased with what they did this offseason.
Need a hug.
What would have made this offseason a success? Because in reality, they weren't going to sign, you know, LaMarcus Aldridge and trade for DeMarcus Cousins and all the other crazy things that happened. But what was a realistic bar for the Lakers this offseason that you felt would have made them winners?
Well, I don't think that they could have done any more than they did. You know, they reached out to LaMarcus Aldridge. I believe that the second meeting was fully for show, and I think you would agree with me. That was because of all the bad press that they got. LaMarcus is a good guy, and he wanted to be able to give them, you know, a good show, but it was for a free dinner. You know, he wasn't going there to actually entertain the idea of signing, and Dwayne Wade floated the idea out there on social media as well, too. He wasn't ever coming here, so you can't really look. I mean, you're heartbroken as a Lakers fan because you're used, you know, to the old Lakers, where, you know, with the 2006 through 2008, where, you know, you want to come play for a winner, come play for us. That's not those Lakers anymore. So I don't think they could have done much more than they did. I think that the biggest thing they could have done better is really not anything to do with them. It's more to do with the fans. It's perspective. You need to have perspective. Jabari Davis wrote a great piece, Embrace the Youth Movement, about the Los Angeles Lakers, and that's what our fan base needs to do. I'm constantly battling every day, Josh, with Lakers fans talking about D'Angelo Russell is a bust. We're three summer league games into the season, and I am battling people daily about, you know, him being a bust, and it's Kobe's fault because he took all this money. It isn't. You know, the CP3 deal, that imploded the entire franchise. You know, you're 2 to 3 years away. So I think the biggest thing that what we need to do as Lakers fans is to really embrace the youth movement, as Jabari said, and have a little perspective moving forward, because we're not going to be able to go out and sign these big-name free agents who want to win now. We're still 2 or 3 years away.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the Lakers' defense, you do have some pieces. I think there's this real pessimistic nature because Laker Nation is used to winning. But you do have Clarkson, you do have Randall, you do have Russell. And the Summer League on the whole has become a huge boom-bust overreaction time. And it's exciting that people get to watch these games, get to see more, and we're not without basketball for all the offseason. But a couple good Summer League games, a couple bad Summer League games don't really mean a lot, in my opinion at least. I said the other day on Twitter, I think it's organized pickup. It's nice to see them out there with some potential teammates. I see them get some coaching, but this isn't the real thing. This isn't the real deal. I think people need to take the Summer League thoughts and input and take that with a grain of salt.
I mean, when Mark Madsen's coaching your team, you know it's Summer League. I mean, Rick Fox is singing on the sideline during the broadcast. It's Summer League. Chill, everybody. You know, it's going to be okay. D'Angelo Russell is not going to be a bust. John Stockton averaged 5 points and 5 assists his first year. People don't want to look at that. And I'm not saying he's John Stockton, but I do believe he's going to average more than 5 points in his first year. I think you would agree. So everybody just needs to slow their roll. They got some good pieces in place. Clarkson, amazing steal. Amazing steal at 46. He's going to be a tremendous shooting guard once Kobe starts to – hopefully Kobe allows himself to be phased out and works around 20 to 22 minutes a game. And let's Clarkson be in there and be a shooter, because he's a tremendous scorer, phenomenal athlete. He reminds me – I don't want to be blasphemous, but he reminds me a little bit of Russell Westbrook, because he's good on the offensive boards and he's super explosive and athletic for a 6'4 guard.
That's ambitious. That is, you know, I'm not going to call it blasphemy, but that's pretty ambitious. You know what? You got that Laker blood in you, though. You can be a little bit optimistic. You can afford to take that risk. Some more recent news in the offseason. I'm going to get to DeAndre Jordan because I'm pretty passionate about that. But before that, Deron Williams signed today. He's officially a Dallas Maverick. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, at the price that they paid for him, was it 2 years, $12 million or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nothing. I mean, you're looking at a guy that was he was overmatched as a max contract guy. It was in over his head in Brooklyn, and he stepped in, and he's obviously been injury-prone. But at the same time, he was never, you know, at that stage of his career when he transitioned to the Nets, he was never a max contract guy, in my opinion. I think that was a little over-ambitious on the Nets' part. And I think that kind of – it all piled up on him, because he really didn't have a good squad around him. He took a lot of the brunt of the blame. He missed a lot of time. It's a perfect move for the Mavericks. And the fact that if they even get 85% of what he was, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, boy, they're making out like a bandit. I mean, look, they had Rajon Rondo. I mean, anytime you get away from Rajon Rondo and get a guy that's even comparable – and he's definitely better. I think even at still, I mean, when he's on the floor, he's still better than Rajon Rondo. I believe that, hands down, no question. So it's an upgrade, and it's a cheap upgrade. It's a good move.
I agree with you. I was looking, just double-checking. It was 2 years, $10 million. And when you're comparing, like you said, to Rondo, I would rather have Deron Williams at $5 million, take the risk not knowing what he could be, than pay Rondo $10 million after the disaster that we just had happen there in Dallas. Does Deron Williams leaving the Nets affect his legacy in a negative way, or was it just never really happening there, injuries, chemistry, it was forced, the Nets tried to buy a title? Can Deron Williams redeem himself, and his morale is so low, the NBA Twitter sphere just has no love for Deron Williams. Can he get that back a bit if he performs well in Dallas?
Well, I'm going to answer your first question first. I don't believe that it taints his legacy. I don't think he really has one. I don't think he really has, you know, much of one. And if he goes to Dallas and he plays well for 2 years, but he's going to forget about those Nets years, because it's the Nets. No offense, Nets fans, but it's the Nets. So, you know, nobody really expected him. Joe Johnson's, you know, they're going to keep him, and he's getting overpaid like crazy. Nobody expects him to win, but he's going to get his money, right? Kind of the same thing with Deron. If he comes into Dallas and he performs well and he stays relatively healthy, they have a really good training staff there. if he stays relatively healthy, he puts the work in, and he's somewhat successful, I believe his confidence will come back. I believe that he has the skill set. I mean, gosh, I remember, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I was, and it looks kind of silly now, but I was putting him over Chris Paul in arguments and debates, and there was good reason for it at the time because his stats and what he was doing, he was phenomenal. And again, if he comes back and he plays even 80% of that with the Mavs, his confidence naturally is going to come back. He's not a max contract guy anymore. He's just a piece on a team. Now, the Mavs are a long ways away now. They have no front court. When you're entertaining the idea of having D'Alembert or JaVale McGee on your team at this point, and JaVale's what, 25 games in the last couple of years, they're in bad shape. I think it's more than Deron Williams, and that's what I fear. If Dallas goes in, they don't bolster that front court, and they don't put a squad. Dirk can't carry the load anymore, and if Deron goes in there with no squad again, it might be a repeat of the Nets, and that would be the worst possible thing for his legacy and for his confidence.
Absolutely, and this is something that people are already forgetting. Dirk said when they were hunting that he was willing to come off the bench this next year. He is definitely not giving you 35 to 38 minutes a game carrying an offense. He's just not that guy anymore. Great, great career, but it all comes to an end. The Mavs are at a weird place where a lot of other teams would have blown it up, hit the restart button. Dallas is one of the very few teams that just, no matter what, no matter every offseason, they seem to miss on on their guy, and they always fill out the team with what they can get and fight and try to come back and just make a showing in the playoffs if nothing else. Do you like this mentality? You like this scrap it out? We're going to try to win every game we can with what we can mentality? Or do you think the correct move is like what most of the teams are doing in the league right now and blowing it up?
Well, let me give you a little perspective before I give you my answer, because I'm going to tell you this. I'm a huge Mark Cuban fan. Kind of symbiotic spirits a little bit. I'm fiery like him, kind of polarizing, very passionate. So I love Mark. He's kind of crazy, which makes him fun. But he's a winner. He's not somebody that wants to tank, and that's basically what you're alluding to. I never liked the idea of tanking, and I understand that in the league now, that's how you get high draft picks. But look how many high draft picks look how many high draft picks do not help teams. I don't like the idea. I love the fact that you scrap for everything you can. You try anything you can to win every year. He's a winner. He's going after winning. He's not going to be able to win. But, boy, you fight with everything you have to win. I have the same type of spirit, so I absolutely love it, in my opinion. Never been a tank guy.
I like it as well. I see the logic behind tanking, and I think that, if I'm being honest, it's probably the better option for a franchise trying to win a championship down the line. But I don't want to be Philadelphia. I don't want to be a Philadelphia fan sitting at home watching my team get blown out every single night. Every time a player starts to show some development, watch him get shipped out. I don't want that. I don't think that's very fun as a fan. And whether it's successful or not, we still don't know. I think that has another 2 or 3 year window on it before we can judge it. But what are your thoughts on Philadelphia while we're here? Is it working?
Well, Embiid's out, you know, again, and he was in good spirits a couple of days ago. I had Jameson Wells on the show this evening, and he said that he actually spoke with Embiid, and he was in great spirits, but out for another year. And, you know, Noel, he can't space the floor. So, I mean, how is he going to play with Okafor? I think it's terrible moves by the front office, in my opinion. I think that it's perfectly indicative of the Philadelphia 76ers not knowing what they're doing. And I'm not trying to bash them. I'm just calling out facts. I mean, if you look at their draft picks over the last 3 or 4 years, you honestly, I mean, if you know anything about basketball, you have to sit there and scratch your head, like, what the heck are they doing? Like, it doesn't make much sense. You know, are we trying to do triple towers and all guys that are injury prone? Well, good luck with that. That's not how you win nowadays. Who won the championship last year? It was the Golden State Warriors from the perimeter, right? So why are you doing this? I think that Philadelphia is in a dated mindset. I think that they are kind of floundering to trying to find their way and who they need to pick and bring in, and it's evident in who they are drafting. Now, with that said, Noel is an asset. They're going to move him, like you said. That's what they do, right? Okafor is going nowhere until his rookie contract goes out, because love him. I've watched him in Summer League, and I know it's Summer League, but what I do is I segregate the game, and I watch the actual individual player and their skill set. And Okafor has impressed me with his ability to be able to switch on defense and actually come out and guard on the perimeter way better than I ever thought he would. And that was what I thought was going to be his biggest flaw. Now, he wasn't asked to defend as much, I don't believe, in college for a lot of reasons, you know, foul trouble and what have you, and their strategy. But seeing that so far, it's been impressive. Now, he's, you know, he's 270 pounds. He's probably going to sell out another 20 pounds. He's the closest beast that we've seen, kind of like to an Andrew Bynum. I don't want to put that name out there because Bynum, you know, is such a bust in the end with the knee problems and just never really putting the work in. I don't see Okafor doing that. I see him as being a piece, an asset that Philadelphia, if they're really going to try to get this right, they must hang on to him.
I actually don't mind the Andrew Bynum comparison. People forget that he was a key piece, that second title run, and I know his numbers weren't big, but when he was on the floor, he made a difference. He became an all-star. He was an NBA all-team player, and then his work ethic and injuries kind of blew it up. But I think Andrew Bynum, for his 2 or 3 year run there where he was an all-star type player, I don't mind that comparison at all.
Yeah, he reminds me
moving
a lot
back,
of him. Yeah.
Moving back to the West, and moving back to another center, DeAndre Jordan, and I think it's been talked about a lot this week. I had a lot to say on Twitter. You had a lot to say on Twitter. Just my first question. As a basketball player, from a basketball standpoint, did DeAndre Jordan make the correct choice going back to the Clippers?
Yes, I do. I do believe he made the correct choice from a basketball standpoint because he is not a number one option, and he knows it. So I believe that
from
he
understood.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, he looked at the situation in Dallas, and Mark Cuban said, come in, you're going to be our Shaq, right? And this was a direct quote. And that is a lot of pressure, for any dude, especially a guy who's been a third option his entire career, never developed his offensive game, doesn't really have a mid-range jumper, doesn't really have post moves to speak of. He's a throw-it-up-and-dunk-it type of guy and a hustle player. You're going to be our Shaq? Tremendous amount of pressure. I believe that's the reason why he made the choice to go back to L.A. And because of that, that tells me everything I need to know about who he is as a basketball player. So for him, from a basketball standpoint, absolutely it was the right move.
It's interesting, though, because all reports indicated that that's what he wanted. And then when it became a reality for him, it scared him and he turned the other way. Now I'll ask you, as a human being, did he make the right choice given the circumstance?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't like what he did. I mean, I'm a guy of high integrity, super high integrity. I'm come from the gutters, literally, and I've done it the right way. So I don't like guys that cheat, or I don't like guys that are, you know, scared to be able to man-to-man talk to you, because you need to do that, especially when you're talking about tens of millions of dollars. You don't shun somebody who's willing to pay you tens of millions of dollars and send out a tweet. To me, that is absolutely detestable. It speaks directly to your character as a man. I think it's cowardly. And that's the word that I used on Twitter, and I'll stand by it. And I would honestly say that to his face. You cannot do that. You've got to pick the phone up. Honestly, if you don't want to do it, you're scared. You don't tell Mark Cuban you're on a date when you're actually sitting there with Doc waiting for it to strike midnight, because that's what he was doing. We all know that, right? Well, I wonder how Doc feels about being his date. But anyways, that's besides the point. The thing is, you don't do that. You pick the phone up, you make the phone call, and you say, you know what, this is not the right fit. I don't feel like I'm a number one option. And because of that, I need to go back to where I'm comfortable, where I feel like I can contribute the most. How long would that take? 5 minutes? The fact that he didn't do that speaks volumes about his character as a human being. Detestable.
I'm with you. I like to think I'm a man of a lot of integrity. It bothered me tremendously that a man in the position that he was in had a choice to make. He verbally committed to that choice, and then he ran and hid in the way that he did. And it was interesting to me on Twitter. A lot of people were like, oh, you don't know his story, and he's going to make the – I hear this one a lot. When someone screws up in pro sports, oh, he made the best choice for him and his family at the time. Well, that's fine. That's great things to consider, but you did make a choice, and you did commit to someone. And I'm one of those people who I believe that making decisions on and off the court are going to define your legacy. And legacy is something that is going to last far beyond the next 10 years that he's playing basketball. I don't think it's something that players take into consideration enough. Are you going to remember this 10 years from now when DeAndre Jordan retires? Are you going to remember the Dallas disaster?
It might be the only thing that I remember about him, to be honest with you. I don't see him as being a max player. I mean, obviously, you look at the market and the way it's been set. I mean, guys like Reggie Jackson getting paid like he did, and Cantor, and we'll get to that maybe. I don't know, but you know, obviously he's going to get paid. But, you know, when you segregate the market from his actual value, he's not a max player guy. He is literally a third option hustle player with a lot of athleticism. So if he goes in, and as expected, in my opinion, the Clippers win nothing because I believe Doc is an overrated coach, and I don't believe that he can ever get this team to gel. He's proven that, and that's what really segregates the good coaches from the great coaches. You've got to be able to get this team to gel, right? You got to get these egotistical young stars to gel and come together for a common goal and communicate. Doc doesn't do that. He hasn't done that. This team's not going to win. So 10 years from now, he stays with the Clippers. He wins nothing. It might be the only thing that I remember from DeAndre Jordan. Yes, I'll remember it.
And I know a lot of the times this podcast is very X's and O's, and we're talking about who's better than who. But I just want to take this minute to think about when we're all done, when everything is said and done, we leave this earth, all we have is what people remember us for the deeds we made, by the deeds we did and the things we said. And I that's important to me as a man, and I'm just, like you said, it might be the only thing people will remember about him, and I don't even know if he's considered that, and the whole situation's just crazy to me. So with that in mind, I'm going to give you a couple other names of NBA players who have an awful lot of accomplishments, but there were some, you know, murky moments in their careers, and I just want you to tell me the first thought you have and the second thought you have when I give you a name. Sound good?
Lay it on me, man.
All right, let's start. Gilbert Arenas.
Overpaid and overrated.
Overpaid and overrated, okay. Do you want to expand on that at all?
Well, absolutely. I mean, he got paid. He had a contract that was over $100 million. He was somebody that was believed, you know, agent zero. He was going to be your number one scorer, could carry the load for a team. What did he end up doing? He ended up taking that money, falling apart physically, but at the same time never put the work in on the court either. That's what really bothers me a lot about players. If you're talking about their legacy and what you remember them by, did you put the work in? He didn't put the work in. He didn't care, and you still see him doing silly things every once in a while that pops up on Twitter. The guy never grew up. He's overpaid, way overpaid for what he actually produced. If you look at the numbers, there's no question about that, and highly, highly overrated.
What about Sean Kemp?
I would say underappreciated. And super athletic. I mean, those are the two things that popped in my mind. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, so I got to see Sean Kemp. He's a big dude and a physical dude. But he had some leaping ability. He had the ability to, like, do that quick second jump off the ground to be able to go up for rebounds. You don't see a lot of guys that are that big to be able to do that. But he really light on his feet, super athletic. And nobody really talks about him. How often do you hear people talk about him? I mean, you really don't. So I believe he's one of those players that was super good, and obviously his career was shortened a tiny bit, and he tapered off at the end, and you know, he's not going to be one of those top 50 players of all time or what have you, but underappreciated? Absolutely.
What about a guy like Stephon Marbury?
Oh, goodness. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of Stephon Marbury, no joke, is tattoos. And the second thing is tennis shoes because of his, you know, Starberries. But, you know, I want to expand upon that because I wanted to give you my first two thoughts because, you know, all the tattoos that he has and the shoes are obviously, you know, I like the fact that he has, you know, their shoes that are marketable, they're cheap, and people can get them, you know, and he's got a statue in China and what have you. But really, you know, his legacy, in my opinion, Stephon Marbury, is what could have been. Super talented, one of those guys that had the ability to score the ball like crazy and actually fill up the statue. He could assist the ball, too. It really was whatever he wanted to do on a given night. He had that much talent, but he squandered all of it because of his personality and his really inability. And one of those guys, another, again, that really didn't want to put the work in practice, off the court, to build cohesion within the team. And as a point guard, you absolutely have to do that.
And I'll admit, I was leading you a bit here with some of these names, but Stephon Marbury was a great player. He had a good six-year span where he was, I think, 21, 22 points per game, 8 assists. He was a good player, but all people remember what people remember mostly about him is his failures. And I think that's sad that there's going to be really good ball players walking away from the court.
Yeah, the first thing
I got
one
more for you.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead first.
I mean, when the first thing that you think of is tattoos and tennis shoes, it's not good. I mean, especially, you know, 1999 Starburys. So that's a testament to you can be a 21, 22, you know, a game player type of guy for 6 or 7 years. But if you really flame out and you don't show any sort of leadership or ability to work off the court or with your team, your legacy is so tarnished that you remember it a la DeAndre Jordan. That's why he better produce on the court.
Absolutely. And there's a guy, here's another guy for you. I think his legacy's kind of, he's done some positive work on it the last few years, but like I said, in 10 years, who knows? What about Vince Carter?
Oh, super, super exciting. And one of those guys that is, you want me to say two things?
Yeah,
I would say
things, sure.
I would say exciting and fundamental, because a lot of people don't realize how good he's a good ball handler. He actually has some post moves. He's always been a good rebounder. Always been a good teammate. Those are the fundamentals of basketball. You got five guys on the floor. You need to be a good teammate, right? You need to be a good defender. He's always been a good wing defender. You need to be a good rebounder for yourself. Always been a good rebounder. He's the type of guy that's stuck around as long as he has because he has those fundamentals. Now, exciting, half man, half amazing. Some of the best dunks that I've ever seen. I grew up in the 90s, so you know I remember like the 96 slam dunk contest with Kobe Bryant going through the legs, and I remember you know Vince Carter going up there and jackhammering that ball straight through the goalpost with his elbow right there on the rim, and that's an image that I'll never ever forget in those 360s. And the funny thing is, I was looking at some YouTube videos from just like 6 months ago. The guy can still do 360s. Super, super exciting guy.
I'm with you. I love Vince Carter. Air Canada was a treat to watch growing up. Maybe one of the most entertaining players I've ever seen play the game. I think he gets a bad rap for everything that went down in Toronto. I'm glad that's kind of cleared up in the last couple of years. I have a question. On the league right now, I mean, Vince Carter's still playing, but his career is effectively done.
It's done, yeah.
Of people playing, who would you say, with their actions on and off the court, is setting up a very nice legacy for themselves? And give me one example of that, and another example of someone you think who's doing it about the wrong way. We'll say no to DeAndre Jordan. But a good example and a bad example of players building their brand, their legacy, right now in a positive and a negative way.
LeBron James is going to be the guy that's building his brand in a positive way. And I'm throwing out there not only because it's polarizing and that's just how I roll, but when you go back home to Cleveland and you have the ability to stay with Miami, and you know Pat Riley's going to do whatever it takes to be able to get you players because he's Riley. You know, and if you stick with him, he's going to find a way to build you a winner. That's his goal. He's a la Mark Cuban in that way. These guys are winners, right? So you leave that situation, you go back to Cleveland of all places, absolutely horrendous weather. You know, a really blah city. I've been there many times. You know, and you really only go back there because you want and you're focused on your legacy. If LeBron James, and I believe he will, win a championship with the Cleveland Cavaliers, and I don't think there's any doubt that he will, his legacy and what he's doing right now to be able to make that sacrifice, go back when, you know, his athleticism is actually declining right now and it's a little bit tougher to do it, and he knows that it's going to take a little bit of time, and he even acknowledged it this past year, at the beginning of the year, he didn't expect to win the championship, but I believe he will, and I think that he's doing the most of any player that I've seen recently to do everything he can to cement a good legacy for himself. I think that he's very smart, and I think he's a lot smarter than a lot of people realize. I think that he understands legacy. He's talked about the Mount Rushmore, but he's kind of backed off of being on the Mount Rushmore, and I think now he's more focused on his legacy. He's also downplayed that in the media recently, which tells me he's actually more interested in his legacy than he wants to admit, because that's the type of guy he is. He's not going to admit it. That's what he's concerned about. I think he's doing a tremendous job of doing it. And Kobe Bryant, I believe he's sullied his reputation quite a bit right now. And I love Kobe. I'm a huge Lakers guy, and I'm going to throw it out there again because I'm a polarizing guy, and it's just the first thing that comes to my mind. When you take $24 million a year, you hamstring your franchise, when you know that they have no ability to win if you do that, because free agents don't want to come in with a 36-year-old guy, you know, tears his rotator cuff and blows out his Achilles and what have you, and he's getting paid $25 million a year, that really does hurt your legacy. We're talking about right now. So I'm talking about right now, these last 18 months, Kobe has got to, if he wants to change what he's done, and I've seen so much of this, Josh. I get, like I said, every day at least 50 tweets from different people talking about Kobe should take the money. He's the reason. Now, there's more to it than that. It's always more to it than that. But if he wants to change his legacy, we're talking about right now at this moment, he better be a good leader to Jordan Clarkson this year. He better be a tremendous leader to D'Angelo Russell, and he better limit his minutes and actually accept a lesser role.
I like both of those ideas, and it's interesting because they are the two most polarizing players in the NBA and have been for half a decade at least. I think that Kobe does, there's a lot of things I can say that are negative about Kobe Bryant, but he has a real chance to come in here this next season and be a mentor to these young guys and be patient, knowing that they aren't going to win a lot of games, and do some good for this franchise. And that might extend to him being involved in the franchise beyond his playing years. It's something to think about.
And he needs to take that in consideration. I believe he will. I really do. I think that you get humbled as you get older. And, you know, now that he's had three season-ending injuries in a row, you know, if he makes the choice, because everything in life is a choice, if he makes the choice to go out there and chuck 20 shots a game, shoot 37%, and be polarizing and brash with all of his teammates, I believe it's going to tarnish his lasting legacy. So I really hope you're listening, Kobe. Love you to death. We got the same birthday. You're my favorite player since 1995. But I hope you're listening. Take this opportunity, because this is a transition period for the Lakers. You need to be that guy.
I like the way you put that. I'm glad there are Kobe fans out there who are rational, who want to see him succeed and have more to say about him other than five rings. Will, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on my show. I have to have you back again.
Absolutely. It's been a blast, and I'm happy to come back anytime. Have a good night, Josh.
You as well. That was Will Reeve Jr. You can find him on Twitter at Will Reeve Jr., R-E-E-V-E for Reeve, and his podcast is the All Weather Fan Podcast. So, as promised, when we come back, Snotty Drippin' and I will take your calls. Anyone who's a listener, you want to call in, we will try to get you on the air. We will try to hear you out. Thoughts on the offseason, thoughts on Ty Lawson getting himself in trouble today, thoughts on legacy, you want to call, we want to hear it. We will be back in a minute.
Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that most frightens us. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing enlightened about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you. We were all meant to shine as children do. It's not just in some of us, it's in everyone. And as we let our own light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. As we are liberated from our own fear, our presence automatically liberates others. Sir, I just want to say thank you. You saved my life.
Thank you, sir. All of you.
All right, we're back. I'm joined with my co-host, my co-pilot, Snotty Drippin. Snotty, how you doing tonight?
Hey, what's up, brother? Hope everybody listening to TV Land is ready to roll.
I'm excited. We've never done this. We're bringing in the listeners. Let them talk about whatever they want to talk about. I believe we got Lance with us. Lance, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing tonight, Josh?
I'm doing good. Tell us a little bit about yourself, you know, who you write for, and what do you want to talk about tonight?
Okay. Well, my name is Lance Robertson. I write for page2sports.com. I'm an analyst for the Dallas Mavericks on the website every now and then, you know, dipping into other NBA teams, but my bread and butter is the Dallas Mavericks.
Fair enough. Snotty, anything you want to start off with the Mavericks while we got Lance here?
Let's let Lance run the show.
Lance?
Okay,
all right.
Well,
in the driver's seat.
All right, well, the aftermath of DeAndre Jordan is here. In a recent article I said, you know, the world wouldn't be ending if he didn't sign with us, but the day that he didn't sign with us, it sure felt like the world was ending. But as Mark Cuban does, yes? Yeah, Josh?
No, go ahead, Lance. Sorry, I cut you off. That's my bad.
Oh, okay. No, you're good. Just like Mark Cuban always does, he always has something in his back pocket. I mean, they're not always the prettiest of roster moves, but they show pulse that they want to win. You know, they ended up doing a sign-and-trade for Zaza. Not the best center, but he plays hard, and he has a little bit of a mid-range touch. Then we just got Deron Williams, you know, a two-year deal, $10 million. Second year player option, so hopefully he can do what Rondo was supposed to do and play for the big money next year. you know, and that's pretty much what we're looking at right now as far as roster changes that are somewhat of significance.
Well, I want to ask you, Lance, and then ask Snotty, I want to ask you too. This team is hard to predict, and it was a team that came into the offseason, didn't have a lot of pieces. They really only had Dirk, Harris, Parsons under contract. They make this great move. They think they have Jordan. They sign Wes. Everything's beautiful. They pulled it out of the bag. Now it's kind of gone down the drain. Like you said, they bring in Zaza Pachulia. They bring in Darren Williams. They're definitely cleaning up what they can. How many wins is realistic? If I put a gun to your head, how many wins are the Mavs getting this year? And I'll go Lance first, and then I'll do Snotty after.
Okay, well, without Darren Williams, I said around 34, 35 games. But with Darren Williams, I'll say 38, 40, but that's pushing it.
30,
40. Snotty. This is tough for me, man, because I respect what Dallas is trying to do. Dirk's on probably his last legs this season or next season. They don't want to tank, so they're trying their best. But at the same time, that roster, I know Deron Williams is an upgrade from Rondo, but you lost. And we don't know what West Madison is going to look like. We don't know quite what Chandler Parsons is. I will say, would you say?
The most I said was 40 wins. That's the most they'll have.
All right, I'm going to go 30. Man, he's such a good coach, too, but I'm going to say 35 wins. I'd say like 5 wins.
So this team's not making by 40 wins even. It's not making the playoffs in the West.
No.
So
if they were in the East, they'd be like 16.
so for 40, let's say 35 to 40 wins, I think either of those situations, they finish 9th or 10th, probably lose their draft pick. The Mavs have made some gutsy plays to try and stay competitive, but is it the smart move or not? And Stoney, I'll start with you, and then I'll go to Lance.
Well, it's not really the smart move, but I think Cuban's backed himself into a corner. I know it's funny because before DeAndre came, he was even saying, hey, if we don't get DeAndre, we're going to tear it down and we're going to look at tanking. Because, they're going to end up coughing that pick up to Boston, right? It's going to be top 7 protected, I believe. So they really can't tank unless they tank so accurately they fall, you know, the 8th, 9th pick, which is impossible. He's backed himself into a corner, and, like, the chickens came home to roost because he's been selling off draft picks for years and they had no young talent to stock up with, so... there's nothing they can really do. They have to go down swinging. And I hate to see Dirk go out like this. He's one player that's right.
Not you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Lance, what do you think?
Hindsight is 2020, and yeah, you can go back and say, oh, they shouldn't have traded Brandon Wright. They shouldn't have traded Crowder. But honestly, they could have sign those players back, you know, if they weren't going after DeAndre as heavily as they were. But, I mean, with the roster that we had last year, I don't really mind them doing the Rondo trade, especially since a lot of people wanted him on the team, you know, a couple years back. You know, there was always rumors, but, you know, how Ainge's would trade. He waits until he can get the best move most of the time. It just looks bad for the future now. But, I mean, when you have a player like Dirk, you kind of want to do whatever it takes for him to win his championship. You give him the most that you can. Because, I mean, I'm all about building the Mavs, but after what, you know, Dirk's done in his career, taking less money, you know, just taking a less role in the offense. I mean, you just try to give him something to keep him going, you know, keep the love in the game and you know, the competitive spirit, which I'm pretty sure you can't take away from him anyways. But, you know, you just want to give him a reason to keep fighting and get them deep in the playoffs. It just hasn't happened, you know, in a while, since 2011 at least.
That 2011
go ahead, Josh, what you're saying?
2011 team was – they hit it. They hit it. They hit the lottery.
Oh, my God,
won. They won the championship. They beat the Big Three. The Cuban system, I agree with Snotty, it's not smart. It's not the ideal right now. You'd like to be drafting and bringing in guys you can build around, but that's not who they are, and it's kind of admirable in a way that they're staying, you know, away from the green. I put something out on Twitter, and I got a lot of angry people yelling at me, but I'm a Mavs fan. Would you be upset if Dallas, you know, they're 5-15 to start the season, they're not going anywhere. If they traded Dirk to a team that was a contender and he was on board with that. Would you be on board with that? Snotty, why would you first?
Who's going first, me?
No, yeah, go ahead. Sorry about that. Sorry about that.
I don't see how any fan could begrudge Dirk if he went to the front office and said, hey, guys, I appreciate what we've done here, but this is not how I want to go out, and they traded him. And I, Lance, you can tell me if I'm wrong, and Justin, Josh, you can tell me if I'm wrong. I don't see how you could – Dirk's done everything. He's been that franchise for so long, and, you know, they won the championship, and then he sat there and he kept his chin up when they tore it down right behind him. So – you know, if he wants to go out and have a shot at the championship, I'm pretty sure nobody in Dallas would begrudge him that, right?
I 100% agree with you. I mean, look at what he's done for us. I mean, he's taken less money. He's dealt with some bonehead players, and you know, but you know, he keeps his chin up and plays basketball and works out every year to get better somehow, some way. If he wants to win, let him win. I mean, you can only do. The only thing you can do is respect him for that. I mean, he's played with us forever. He'll be the best player in our franchise. Even if he goes somewhere else, hey, sign him to a 10-day contract and let him retire Mav after he's done wherever he's at. I mean, he's still a Maverick for life to all the Mavericks fans and any sports fan. I mean, even if he spends a year with, I don't know, I don't want to say the Spurs, but, I mean, that's the go-to team, you know, recently. So he's still a Mavericks for life, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the comparison I had in my head here was Paul Pierce. I mean, Paul Pierce is now is going to be playing for his third team after the Celtics. He's trying to get one more ring. He's playing for teams that are supposed to be competitive. But no one anywhere in the world would be like, oh, I'm going to remember Paul Pierce as a Clipper. That's not going to happen. There's nothing that's going to damage Dirk's legacy as a Mav. He was the guy. He's an all-time great. He brought us a title. He won an MVP. This is a guy who's established. He will go down in history with a horse on his chest. If he wants to win, it's just not happening. I wouldn't have no problem with it, and I think it's not a bad move for the franchise if they get someone that's going to help them the next 10 years.
I agree. I mean, how could you not?
Okay.
That'd be crazy, right?
I got a question for both of you guys then, all right? You guys are both Maverick fans. I want you to sum up your feelings for this season in one word, Lance.
Difficult.
Expand on difficult before I go.
Okay, difficult as a fan, as a coach, as a player, just difficult. It's going to be difficult from the fan standpoint of, hey, we're used to being at least going to the playoffs. More than likely knowing we're going to the playoffs, you know, this year it'll also be difficult because we might suck, but we won't suck enough to get that top seven. So you top eight, you know, later in the lottery, it doesn't even matter. You suck for nothing. You don't get a lottery pick. So it's a loss. It's difficult to know that even if you don't make the playoffs, you're probably not going to get that lottery pick that everyone wants. It will go to the Boston Celtics. It's just difficult.
For me, I'm thinking patchwork. Patchwork is my word this season. This Mavericks team was a patchwork quilt. Monte Ellis was not their guy. Tyson Chandler came back 2 years later than he should have been there. Dirk is old, and he's not the guy he was. Rajon Rondo was a forced move to try and make a run to the championship that I thought might pay off. It obviously didn't. This team wasn't a team. It didn't gel together. It wasn't built to run together. It just kind of happened, and it failed. It failed miserably. Your patchwork quilt that your Nana made you, it's really nice. You might keep it on your bed for a while when you're in college, but you don't bring that home to the master bedroom. That is the Mavs. The Mavs didn't try to buy a title, but they tried to force it, and it did not happen. Lance, thanks for coming on with us, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh,
why don't you tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter?
Oh, yes. It's Lance_972. I mean, I talk a lot of basketball. I like retweeting Snotty Drippin's tweets because it's funny how he interacts with the people on the Twitter. Pretty funny.
I appreciate it, Lance. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Else?
I do appreciate it.
Anytime, Lance. Anytime. To anybody else out there, if you want to call in, we are taking calls. We are going to go to break for 30 seconds, and we will be back with another caller.
Drew, it's great to have you back on board, Mark.
It's great to be back.
Hey, my old notebook.
Let me see that.
You don't want to look at that. That's boring.
It's draft notes.
Oh, let me get it.
No. Curry. Too short, too slow.
Did I say that? I wouldn't call
with
you
With luck,
that.
Maybe a career in Turkey?
You know, Turkey's pretty competitive right now.
ESPN, your NBA destination for games Wednesdays and Fridays.
All right, we're back. We're live. I'm here with Snotty Drippin. We are taking listener calls. With me, I got John. John, what do you want to talk about today?
Hey, the question I got today is, obviously all the big free agents have kind of signed now. There's still, obviously the Ty Lawson trade that might happen here eventually, or, you know, some minor free agents. But I'm just trying to figure out, you know, which free agent joining a new team do you think is going to make the biggest impact? Obviously, everybody's going to say LaMarcus Aldridge because he's probably the best player that switched teams. But, you know, I'm kind of more looking like a Greg Monroe. You know, I think the Bucks really lacked an interior scorer last year. Zaza Pachulia, you know, he's okay. But, you know, with the emergence of Giannis, Chris Middleton, Michael Carter-Williams, with Jabari Parker coming back, you know, I think he could really make a big impact this year. So I just kind of wanted to see what you guys thought about that.
Snotty, why don't you take the wheel here?
Oh, man, let me think about it. All right, so like you said, everyone's going to say LaMarcus, which is – that's a big deal. DeAndre going back home, that's a pretty big deal too, because I had the Clippers as dropping almost a borderline playoff team with if DeAndre left, and they're right back in the mix with a few key additions they've made. Who do you think? Give me one.
Who, me?
Yeah, you.
I don't know. I know you guys were just talking about the Mavericks, but, you know, I honestly think that Wesley Matthews could be, you know, a really good player there. I think, you know, he'll be seeing the ball a lot more in his hands, so I don't know, you know, if his efficiency is going to go down, since I think he will have a little bit of, you know, a higher usage rate. But, you know, playing off of Dirk, you know, I think that could really help them. And, you know, I'm really looking to see if he can take that next step as a player. Obviously, he's coming off that, you know, Achilles injury, which might take him a little bit to get back into it, but I really honestly do think that he could, you know, have a bigger year with a bigger usage rate and, you know, kind of being that number two guy versus maybe being the number three guy or number four guy in Portland.
Yeah, my problem with Wes Matthews is that as much as I like him, he's not going to create off the dribble. I think we've seen pretty much the ceiling of his skill set. He's an excellent, excellent post-up guy, great spot-up shooter, but I don't think – if he comes back, even, let's say, 80-90% of what he was, we're not going to see much more from him. I think Aflalo might actually have a little resurgence in New York. And don't sleep. I think New York's going to – I hate saying this because the expectations are going to be so huge. They're going to have a pretty decent season. The more I looked at it, because I guess I had the New York bias, but Aflalo, the Lopez brother, Rolo – they've made some really good additions. Porzingis looks really good, which I know as a rookie he might not do too much. But I'm thinking Aflalo will make New York go from laughingstock to competitive in the East. Not good, but competitive in the East. I really think, honestly, it sounds funny, Roy Hibbert, even though he's kind of cast off by Indiana, he's going to mean so much to the Lakers for the simple fact that they're not going to be a layup line. And he's not going to average 15 points a game. He's not going to average 10 rebounds a game. He's going to be the same fumbling, stumbling Roy, but having that big guy clogging the middle defensively will change the whole tenor of all their games. And they'll be in some knockdown dragouts, and I think we're going to see an entertaining system for them. So those are two two names that move that I think will have a bigger impact than a lot of people might think.
I got a question for you, John. You mentioned Greg Monroe right at the start here. Is this Bucks team going to be legitimate next year with Kidd coming to second year coaching, Jabari Parker coming back healthy? Is this team ready to compete, or are they still a young team in development?
You know, I think a big part of it's going to be, you know, whether if Jabari Parker is healthy and he's ready to, you know, take that next step. I mean, obviously, we've seen what Chris Middleton can do. You know, he had a big year. You know, he just got a big contract from the Bucks. You know, I don't know what they're going to run. I mean, they have a really long lineup. I mean, I like a guy like John Henson, too. You know, he provides a lot of defense. But is he a starter? You know, I don't know. Do they run, kind of like a small, long lineup with Carter Williams, Giannis, Middleton, Jabari Parker, and Greg Monroe, and play Monroe at the center. You know, I don't know if Monroe's at his best at center, but, you know, I think they can compete. You know, the East is really pretty wide open. I mean, you have the Raptors, you know, they're okay, but, I mean, they're nothing special. You have the Wizards who, you know, they have Beal, they have John Wall. I don't know if they're ready to take that next step yet, though. The Bulls, I think, are going to take a step back this year. So I think they have a very good chance. Now, are they better than the Cavaliers? I don't think so, but I do think they have a lot of potential.
And that's a fair take, Snotty. I was thinking about this. Someone tweeted a couple weeks ago that the Bucks were the Warriors if the Warriors couldn't shoot threes, and it's kind of interesting. This is an athletic team that isn't a great outside shooting team, but they played really hard. They played really hard in the playoffs. They almost had an upset. Snotty, what do you think about the Bucks? Are they for real?
I think they're definitely for real. They're still one shooter away. An Anthony Morrow type would be just outstanding right there. Or if they somehow gotten a hold of R.J. Hunter. So they're a couple shooters away. People were telling me how Monroe's not a real center and, you know, he doesn't scan space the floor. I get it. The optimal offense now has, you know, big men who can shoot. Great. They don't have it. They're so long on the perimeter. They're going to switch everything. They are going to – I think they could be more of a defend by committee in the lane. So while they don't really have rim protection, they're going to just kind of clog up the lane and make life difficult for teams, almost like Golden State did when Bogut sat. Because other than Cleveland, when those big guys were just beating up on Golden State inside, they were actually, no matter what, no matter who was on the floor, they were decent protecting the lane. So I definitely think they're legitimate. By legitimate in the East, Cleveland has it on lock, I think, for the next couple of years. I think Washington's ahead of them. But other than that, they could probably be in the next tier down. Miami's in the upper level of that next tier down, and then Chicago and Milwaukee's right there.
I got one more question for you, John, before you bring someone else on the show. I know you're a Minnesota fan. You tweet me a fair bit. Are you more optimistic? Would you rather – well, I'm not going to say would you rather. You're obviously a Minnesota fan. But which team has a better future right now, the Minnesota Timberwolves or the Milwaukee Bucks?
That's a good question. I would probably have to say the Bucks, just because, you know, the Wolves, they have, they have Wiggins, they have Towns. Obviously, that's a great, you know, cornerstone right there. But, I mean, they still have a lot of question marks. Is Ricky Rubio going to take that next step as a point guard? I mean, he's still young, but he can't really shoot the ball, as we all know. That's a problem these days as a point guard. There's Zach LaVine, who I'm not as high on as others. You know, I think he can be a good scorer off the bench, but, you know, I don't think he's going to be the superstar that some people think he is. And then, I mean, they have decent guys like Shabazz and Gorgui Dieng, who are, again, good bench pieces, but I don't know if they're, you know, they're there yet. Whereas the Bucks, I think they have, you know, four very high-quality starters, and then Michael Carter-Williams, who I'm kind of down on. You know, I think if he can take the next step, I think the Bucks, in the immediate future here, have a brighter future. But if the Wolves can maybe get, you know, one more piece or add a free agent here in a couple of years, I think they could maybe surpass them, depending on the development of Towns, who, you know, he looks like a great two-way player, but he's going to have to get his foul trouble under control and just feel a bit stronger in the post, and that way guys can't back him down too easily.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, John. I appreciate you coming on the show. I appreciate you listening. Let everyone out there know where they can find you on Twitter if they want to talk basketball with a really straight guy.
Yep, it's at the Finga, FINGA, and I appreciate you guys having me on. It's a good listen, and I will continue to listen here.
Thanks, John. Thanks for coming on. Now, I'm bringing on Desmond. Desmond, you with us?
Yes, I am, buddy. How's it going?
Excellent. How are you doing tonight, Des?
Can't complain. Enjoying the show, as always. You guys always do a great job.
Thank you. What do you want to talk about tonight?
Well, I have two point guard-oriented questions. First question being, what do you guys think happens with Ty Lawson after his issues?
Oh, man.
Going on with Denver, his fourth DUI. You know, Nuggets did draft Emmanuel Mudiay, who, given the news that I've seen on Twitter and just the general vibe of post-draft feelings, it feels like a lot of people are still wondering how he slid all the way to seventh, because he's been heating it up. Him and another surprise, kind of a veteran, not really a rookie, but Marcus Smart. I know that's not his guy right there.
Yeah.
He's been heating up this summer league. But given what's going on with Ty Lawson and and the Great Warriors came out and said that his stock has pretty much plummeted. What is Denver going to do with Ty Lawson? Because they pretty much drafted the franchise, if, you know, we want to call Moody that. Usually the point guard, if, you know, it's not LeBron or KD or Paul George out there, it's usually the point guard who's the franchise. What do you think? What do you guys think happens to Ty Lawson now?
It's not. This is all you, man.
Yeah, I'll take this, man. I've been, because you know what? It's all right. I'm going to say this. I hope Ty Lawson gets the help he needs. Ty Lawson has. I'm not going to say he's an alcoholic because, you know, that's. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know. But I've heard, and even this is the sad thing. I've heard before, and I don't know what. Well, man, I don't care. I can say it. I've heard stuff about, you know, maybe him coming into practice smelling like alcohol. I've heard, we all heard what happened last year in Denver. I mean,
right.
He's a veteran, and that team quit on Brian Shaw. I just have, there's a bad cloud around him right now. And before, it's funny because I was watching Summer League, and they were talking about, the coach, Mike Malone, was saying, oh, yeah, him and Moody are going to play well together. I can see him playing, and, you know, Moody is a big guy. He can play the two guard. Well, this is before the second DUI. I think they pretty much have to just cut their bait. They're either going to buy him out or, you know, trade him to a team with a lot of cap space for picks and scraps. Because you do have Moody, and I've been watching Moody. Moody right now is better than D'Angelo Russell. Right now, he is. He has great feel for the game. He can get anywhere he wants on the court. He's big and strong. He's doing pro plays where he's hitting guys with the shoulder to get them, knock them off their pivot and hit a step back. So I say they got to cut bait with this guy as soon as possible. They're not going to get a good return for him. I hope he goes somewhere and he gets it together, gets his help. He's owed over $12 million a year for the next 2 years. So financially, it's not a problem. But, yeah, he has to go. And I don't know what team really could take him right now. They need a team with a veteran presence and a strong coach. And a team that's not doesn't have a lot of young impressionable guys, unless he can just change his whole attitude around and get it together. But I don't know, Josh. What do you think?
Still talking to Lawson. This is a guy I think that is. Well, I don't want to say deserves. I don't know if this guy deserves an awful lot right now, but he is a guy who can still play. He is 27 years old. His contract is not atrocious. Somebody needs to make a move for this guy. If they dump him on waivers, I think that's a terrible mismanagement of assets by Denver. I know his value is at an all-time low, but we got crazy deals where second-round picks go for nothing. You better get something for Ty Lawson if you're Denver. I wouldn't really want him in Dallas right now. He's not a guy that I want to get behind, especially after I just saw the Rajon Rondo explosion. But this is a guy who can play, and someone should take a chance on him. It's too bad the Kings signed Rondo because they're the team that I would think most willing to roll the dice.
You know,
anything else you
want to
talk about
this? I just wanted to add on that. It's interesting that you both of you said, well, you said the Kings, because, you know, right after Moody got drafted, there's a video of Lawson smoking a hookah, and he immediately turned to his friend and said, that's it, they're trading me to the Kings. So it was just like, you can kind of see in the video, I mean, there's nothing wrong with smoking a hookah, but, I mean, just his mannerisms and the way he looked and his slurred talk, you know, it's just like you never want to see a player with promise, or anyone for that matter, just look that incoherent at times. And he has, like Snotty said, I've heard the reports, I've seen a report where they talked about him coming into practice and, you know, smelled of alcohol and stuff like that. So I think two teams that might just go with it, and you guys talked about veteran presence. I think Houston, even though they did bring back Patrick Beverley, I think they do need scoring from the point. That's something that they missed, especially in the postseason. I think they missed Patrick Beverley more than anything because I think he would have gave Steph Curry fits. And also New York, I think Melo might try to take somebody under his wing. I know they made the move for Jerry and Grant, but I think it wouldn't hurt to have a veteran if he's doing what he needs to do and not getting in trouble. But then again, New York might be the wrong spot for him. But in regards to the second question I had, we're talking about, like, everything with LaMarcus Aldridge and going to the Spurs and everything that's happened in the Western Conference. How do you guys see the rebuild going for Portland the next few years? Because Damian Lillard, they just signed up to that big contract. He's a young 24. He's a point guard that I would want to build around if I had no choice. I mean, obviously there are some point guards you'd rather have, but he's not a bad consolation prize. I feel like he's one of the best young point guards in the game. How do you see the rebuilding project going for Portland over the next few years, and what specifically do you think they need to go towards to surround him with better talent? Because I think they have some good talent around him now, and just in that Western Conference, it's not enough.
Snot, why don't you go first?
I think right now they're doing the exact right thing. They're snatching up a lot of young talent on short contracts. I think they can do nothing. They did the smart thing. First of all, they locked up Dame with that extension, right? I think they got him, 5 years, 125, 130 mil, something like that.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing, that they solidified that bedrock. They said, we got our guy that we're going to build around. And from what I understand, LaMarcus had an issue how they were trying to kind of push him to be the face of the franchise, which I don't think they were. I think Dame just had that personality, and LaMarcus has a more introverted personality. But so they got that. They got him. They got a lot of bigs right now. They got a lot of young players. And people try to tell me that they see, hey, Boston might do like Houston did and flip all these average players for Harden. Well, I think Portland's a better case to do it right now. They have more attractive young talent that you can package up to do things with, and they're going to have a lot of cap space here. So they're fine right now. All they can do next year is swing in free agency, see who they can get. They're probably going to be in the lottery, so they want to make sure they draft wisely, best player available right now. And that's it. That's all they can really do. I think Portland's a quality franchise. They're very professional. I think teams know that they get treated well when they go there, so I don't see them having a problem attracting free agents to go join Dame, especially if Dave makes the mini leap and gets a 3-point shot back together.
I don't want to disagree entirely with Snotty. I like Damian Lillard. I think he's a smart guy on and off the court. I think he works really hard, so I'll give him all that. I don't know that contract was totally earned by him at this point, but when you watch your other four starters walk out the door, what are you going to do? The other thing is CJ McCollum has really gone under the radar, and this is a guy who can actually play. I see him as a starter on that team moving forward, like a real contributor. That's nice when you have someone on your team that you already are thinking this guy's going to come in. And the other thing that's nice is you had four of your starters leave in free agency. You don't have a lot of, bad or Batum was traded, but you have four starters leave. You don't have a lot of money tied up. Like Snot said, there's a lot of space. There's a lot of room to improve, and in free agency and in the draft, you own your picks. I think Portland's going to be okay. I know it was a tough offseason as a Blazers fan to be in the playoffs the last couple years and feel like you're on the cusp and not get there, but I think Portland will be okay. I don't think, unlike a lot of teams, they're not backed up. They don't haven't traded a ton of picks. They aren't stuck in cap hell. So I'm not upset by any of their moves this offseason. I think the Al-Farouq Aminu signing wasn't bad either.
Two things I want to say, too. CJ McCollum looks a lot like Randy Foy. And I'm looking at the roster, Dame, Myers Leonard, even Tim Frazier, Joel Freeland. They got Alonzo G, Mason Plumlee, Pat Connaughton. They look like a Gap ad is what they look like. But I think they're going to be pretty exciting, man. I'm looking at them. They're going to be young and fun to watch. Not exciting, but young and fun to watch. Noah Vonleh, Ed Davis. I think they're going to get up and down a lot. Farouk's a great blue guy. Pat Connaughton can jump out the gym. Mason Plumlee can jump out the gym. Dame can jump out the gym. So you got the young athletes. It's going to be okay. It's going to be a little rough this year, but it'll be fun.
Des, thank you so much for coming on, man. Appreciate your questions. We'll have to get you on for a longer bit in the future here for sure. You want to tell everyone where they can find you on Twitter?
Thank you, guys. Thank you. You can find me at D3SP4. Just find me there. I love to talk everything, basketball, movies, crazy Twitter stuff. I like to enjoy the Twitter wave, as they say it. Well, you guys have a good night.
All right, brother.
Dez is a quality tweeter, 100%. I follow him. He's a funny guy. We are going to run a quick 30-second commercial here, and then we're going to be back with Nico.
Do you have a tree that needs pruning, a light bulb that needs changing, or maybe there's something that you just can't reach? Well, now there's help. Call 1-800-TALL-MEN, and we'll send a caring professional to help you with your needs. Call now, 1-800-TALL-MEN. But hurry, because who knows when our season's going to start.
Thanks, mister.
Tough times? Drink Sprite, look under the cap, and you could win $25,000 in the Sprite salary cap game.
1-800-TALL-MEN.
All right, I'm back with Snotty dripping in the co-pilot seat, and we got Nico. Nico, you there?
Hey. Yes, what's up, y'all? How you doing?
Thank you for calling in. Thank you for waiting. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, first of all, I just want to say that this is my first time listening to the podcast, and I've been looking for a basketball podcast to listen to ever since ESPN shut down Bill Simmons and the BS Report. So I think I'm going to start listening to y'all. I have like a two-part question. I'm a big Orlando Magic fan, right? I'm here at the University of Florida. I've been in Florida basically my whole life. And the Orlando Summer League just ended. Aaron Gordon looked really good. Hizonja didn't look like any form of a European bust. Do you guys think that this is the year that Orlando finally makes the playoffs after all this rebuilding and after Dwight left and they've acquired all these assets and they have a nice core? Do you guys think this is the year they pull maybe do something like Milwaukee did and like sneak into the playoffs, especially in a weak Eastern Conference?
Let's not go first. I'm excited about this one. I know we disagree.
Yeah, I like this one a lot. I don't think this is the year. I think this year you see a lot of improvement. Skiles, one thing about Scott Skiles, when he takes over the teams, they automatically become better defensive teams. He's a tough-nosed, great coach for a team like this with all this young talent. The thing with Orlando, the one of the positives, you have so much talent on that roster just across the board. You got Aaron Gordon, you got Vucevic, you got Hizonja, you got Oladipo, you got Elfrid Payton, you got even Channing Frye is a great stretch four. I know he kind of didn't fit last year, but I'm thinking this team might have to package a couple of these young guys they got and move them for somebody, I guess, an upgrade, not like a superstar, of course, but a higher level guy before they really make that jump, because right now it's just a logjam. They still need more shooting. But I do like that. Yeah, I think they're going to be in the mix where, maybe January we'll be talking, hey, can they sneak in and get the 8th seed? But I think the teams in front of them are just a little, they're vet teams in front of them who are a little further ahead in the process. So, but don't lose faith. Don't even sweat it, because Orlando is definitely on the come up. I love Tobias. I think I like him a lot better than a lot of people do for some reason. But, yeah, I think you guys need to clear up some of that logjam you have so you can start giving guys long minutes and let them get in rhythms and actually, get reps and build together. You think you're still a shot blocker away, but you're getting there.
I love this Orlando team. I think they're a lot of fun. I got to see them live a couple times over the last year or two. Vucevic Main is fun. That Dwight trade looks a lot better now that he's developed. I'm excited for Hizonja. He's looked good in summer league. I am huge on Victor Oladipo. I think Victor Oladipo is going to be a top five shooting guard by this time next year. I think he's that good. I think he's a special player. And Tobias Harris is an almost all-star. He's a borderline all-star player who everybody was chasing, Aldridge and Jordan and whoever else in free agency. And Tobias Harris, I don't think he was feeling the love, because a guy who I thought might have got scooped up on a max deal, and maybe Orlando doesn't match if that's the case, comes back at a discount to play in Orlando. I think this is a team that's got a lot of talent. Like Snotty said, it might have to flip a piece or two, but I think this is a team on their way, and I think they could in the East be competing for that 7-8 seed next year for sure. What was your second question there, Nico?
Yeah, great analysis, guys. You guys might have already talked about this, but it's been in the news. I saw it on my Twitter feed. That situation where Paul George basically said that he doesn't really want to play power forward in Indiana, and Larry Bird basically rebutted with, "You don't make all the right calls. You don't call the shots around here, PG." Do you think that's just noise, or do you think when you're in a situation like that, there might be a miscommunication between a player and the front office?
Snot, go ahead.
Well, this is what I love about Larry Bird. He's very transparent. He's very upfront. And a lot of ways, he's embraced the analytical side of basketball. And him and his coach, they, obviously I think they're very forward-thinking because they want to step it up and pick up the pace and, get into the Pacers-based era. At the same time, he's not going to Yes, he's Paul George is your star, but he's not going to coddle him. So he's absolutely right. You know, he wants to make sure there's a very distinct line drawn in the sand. We're not going to play this game. You know, we're picking up the pace and we move players to take advantage of Paul George's skill set. Oh, the 6'8", 6'9", small forward, going to turn into stretch four at times, and you're going to do it. And I appreciate that, and I think Paul George, he might have made it known, but I don't think he's going to make too much of a stir. I don't think they're going to play him power forward for, you know, 20, 25 minutes a night. They're going to use it situationally. They're going to space the floor with him and let him attack slower, small power forwards, not guys who are going to bruise him inside. So I think in the long scheme of things, it's not going to be a big deal. But I like that. Larry Bird doesn't play around, and I like that. So,
first of all, his nickname is Larry Legend. You listen to the legend. No offense to Paul George. He's a nice player. He's up and coming. Hopefully he's not scarred by these injuries. But you listen to the guy who's got three rings on his finger, who's a multiple MVP. He knows what he's doing. I'm going to give you one stat here. George Hill, when he didn't play for the Pacers last year, they went 12-27. When George Hill comes into the roster, and keep in mind there's no Lance Stevenson, David West is in and out, Paul George is still out, they go 26-17. There is not a lot of talent on that Pacers team. They found a way to win games at the end of the season. You listen to Larry Bird. If you're Paul George, you play your role. I don't think there's any big confusion here. I think maybe that's just an offhanded comment. We'll look into that in the next year and see what happens. But I think if you're Paul George, you know your role. You listen to your guy. You have faith. This organization was on the cusp of making the finals. I don't know about winning a championship, but they were on the cusp of making the finals for about 2 years. I think they'd like to get back there. Thank you so much for coming on, Nico. Could we,
tell everyone where to find you?
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, we'll give you one more.
Yeah, quick question for you, both of you guys, real quick. Yes or no. Nico, do you think
Indiana
makes the playoffs? Did Indiana make the playoffs, and what seed?
Do I think Orlando makes the playoffs?
No, Indiana.
Oh, Indiana. I'm going to say no. I'm really going to say no.
That's fair.
They lost Hibbert, though. I was at the Orlando Summer League for one day, and I got to see Joe Young play, and I think he's a really nice player. He definitely knows how to score. But David West gone, Roy Hibbert gone. I don't think they make the playoffs this year.
All right. Hey, what do you say, Josh?
Tough call. My biggest worry is they brought in Monte Ellis. They have Rodney Stuckey. I don't know. That's a lot of guys who want to touch the ball in the backcourt. I think George Hill is the guy to touch the ball, and now I think he's taking the ball out of his hand. So it'll be an interesting situation. I can see them right in that 8-9 spot too. Like I said, Nico, thanks for coming on. Tell everyone where we can find you on Twitter.
Yes, I am on Twitter at TheNicoTan. I tweet a lot about basketball. I tweet a lot about the Florida Gators because I'm here at the University of Florida. But, I appreciate y'all taking my call, and y'all have a good night.
All right, brother. Thank you very much, Nico. We are going to bring on, I believe, Kevin. Hey, Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. What's going on, guys?
Yo!
Not much. What's going on?
Snotty knows you, apparently. Snotty knows this guy.
Yeah, he was the one who DM'd me, told me what was going on. So that's good. I enjoy the show.
Appreciate that.
Thanks for joining us, Kevin, the most diabolical man I know on Twitter. Okay.
Diabolical. Okay, what does the most diabolical man on Twitter want to talk about?
That's not true, but we'll talk about that another time. I got two questions. I'm a Knicks fan. What do you guys think about Kristaps Porzingis long term?
Stop, go ahead.
I'm ready to roll. Yeah, I'm ready to roll, man. Let's backtrack a little bit. I started keeping up with I don't watch college basketball. I don't like it at all. So I don't really follow too much draft info. I started picking up around maybe February, started actually doing a little research. Draft Express is a great resource. They do the homework, and they got the videos and everything. So I watched this kid maybe in March, and I was just blown away. You know, but still, he's playing over in Europe. You know, you don't know the level of competition. But I'm watching the step backs. I'm watching him pull off curls. I'm watching the jump shots. So then I heard as the Rumpus draft came, you know, he started off, I think, you know, I don't know, they had him estimating go between 7 and 10. Then I hear he might go, you know, 5. And right? Then I hear, you know, he could be number one pick. And, you know, I heard New York fans start rumbling. They had the fourth pick. So I know they booed him. They booed him when they made the pick. I think the kid's going to be outstanding. I think he was a dynamite pick. I applaud Phil Jackson for going out against the grain and not just getting the safe pick, which I think would have been like Moutier. even Willie Cauley-Stein probably signs. So I love the kid. I think he's going to end up being a legit, you know, 17 to 20 point scorer. He already can. He already has a great understanding of verticality. He's long. He's athletic. I think you got a winner right there, brother.
I like Porzingis a lot. I said this on the podcast a few times. It's a kiss of death to be labeled the next Dirk Nowitzki. If you like any European player coming out, don't ever label him next Dirk Nowitzki, because it has just not panned out well for anyone that's got that comparison. But this is a guy who can defend. This is a guy who can play at both ends. I don't think he's your typical. He's not Andrea Bargnani. He can move his feet. I don't know if he's going to hop in right away, play 30 minutes, help the Knicks contend, but I think this is a good pick. I'm not really upset by it. I know a lot of Knicks fans were really worried about him. I'm not worried about him. I think this guy will pan out. You got another question, Kev?
Yeah. With the Enes Kanter signing, the $70 million deal he signed at OKC, what does that do for Steven Adams' development?
What does it do for Steven Adams? Well, this is why I say it. There, for Enes Kanter, and we'll throw McGarry in there, and for Adams, and for Serge Ibaka. So we're talking, there's...
What the hell's going on outside my house? Sorry, there's a fire going on the street.
No, so you got power forward center spot. So you got 48, you got 96 minutes a night between those four guys. I think Mitch McGarry's going to be the odd man out. He's going to be kind of the mop-up guy. So between three guys, basically, you got 96 minutes a game. That's plenty of time. I think Adams is going to get his minutes. Him and Serge are going to get minutes. He might even try him with Kanter a couple of times. But for the most part, this is my thing. OKC, yes, they want to develop Steve Adams. He's a guy that doesn't need touches. He's improved every year. But right now their focus is get to next summer and make sure Kevin Durant is happy. I think the Kanter signing was a big part of that. I think they want Adams. I think they're going to keep him around as long as possible. But the nucleus, of course, is Ibaka, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant. And now it's going to be Enes Kanter. So I get it. Steven Adams is great. People love him. They love the attitude. I love his game. But at the same time, the most important thing is getting through the next two summers and keeping your stars happy. So I don't think Adams is going to lose much. Because, I mean, his job is to defend and rebound and, you know, hit the occasional jump hook. He can still do that. You know, if he's getting 18, 20 minutes a night, he'll be fine.
I think a lot of people are wondering this. And same thing for Mitch McGarry. This is a team that has some promising young big men, but promising young big men are just that. They're promising, and hopefully it pans out. The Thunder are in a win-now situation. They're in a let's-not-give-an-asset-away-for-nothing situation because if things don't go well this season, let's be realistic, Kevin Durant is going to leave. And people can say whatever they want. He's given no indication. But this is a Thunder team that has been on the cusp. It's been a title contender for, 4 years now? And health being the biggest reason, but they haven't won it. And I think Durant is tired of it. I think he's maybe second-guessed some of the decisions management has made. We're not going to get into Harden right now because Snotty and I will ruin this show. But this is a team that couldn't let him walk. That was the bottom line, in my opinion. They couldn't let him walk. I know a bunch of the analytics guys that we talked to on Twitter are probably killing me right now. Like, oh, don't you know how many possessions per 100 possessions? Kanter is terribly on defense. No doubt. I've seen the numbers. But this is a guy that's going to be on your team. And I think the best comparison was David Lee. If he is hurting you on defense and you roll him to the bench and he becomes a rotation guy, that's still a rotation guy who can come in and play for you in the playoffs and maybe make a difference in a single series. And if he makes that difference, that might be big enough to keep Durant or move on. So, like I said, if you're willing to spend the money, spend the money. There's options now that you have him that you wouldn't if you let him walk away.
That's also true. That's true. I agree with that.
Anything else, Kev, or are we going to get you out of here?
Let me ask Kevin a question real quick.
Go ahead.
All right, so Kevin, let's say you wake up one morning and you guys play, it's like almost like Freaky Friday. Now you're in the body of Sam Presti, and you have to decide to re-sign Kanter. Tell me, do you re-sign or not, and tell me why you do not, or do not.
I'm not a fan of the guy, but at the same time, it's like I understand. I kind of agree with what both of y'all are saying. I mean, the Thunder don't gain anything by letting him walk. because they're way over the cap anyway. So it's like, it's not like we can say, okay, they let him walk. You have $15 million, $16 million to play with. You keep him. You hope it works out. And, I mean, they did trade Reggie Jackson for him, didn't they? Yeah, they traded Reggie Jackson for him. You might as well just keep him. I don't blame them. I'd keep them too, even if I'm not a fan of the game. It's not exactly the most logical reasoning, but I'd have kept them.
Yeah, and the big thing is also, I mean, I hate saying it because everybody who listens, everybody who talks knows about it. Yeah, the cap jump's coming. So in 2-3 years, that $17 million will be very movable, especially in the last couple years. So it's not. I don't think it's not crippling. Yeah, you're being harnessed to him for a lot of money, but like I said, the big thing is, hey, we want to make sure we give Kevin Durant all the weapons so that this year goes forward and if hopefully he stays around, he feels that we're stocking the war chest for him to try to win the championship.
Yeah, I totally agree with him. I understand why they did it.
Oh, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Kev, for calling in. I got to
no
say,
problem.
Not as diabolical as I thought. Tell people where they can find you on Twitter.
KLEW24. Go ahead, follow at your own risk.
Also known as Kev Bin Laden. So yeah, take that for what you will.
Well, Kev Bin Laden, KLEW24. Thanks again for coming on, Kevin. We got another guy on the line. Alex, do I got you with me? How you doing tonight, Alex?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Welcome to the Polar Podcast with Snotty Drippin' and myself. What do you want to talk about?
Let's talk about the first rule to rebuilding a team. You don't sign Lou Williams and you never sign Nick Young. What were the Lakers thinking with signing Lou Williams this offseason after drafting D'Angelo Russell? You talk about one of the most mind-boggling moves. You already have a crowded backcourt, and you also have Kobe Bryant in his 36-year-old self. I mean, how are you expecting these young guards to develop when you have Lou Williams, Nick Young, and Kobe Bryant on the roster?
That's a good question.
All right, so Alex, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, back off the ledge. I'm going to say it's not that bad. Nothing.
No,
right
I'm
now,
not near the ledge. I think it's – I'm nowhere near the ledge. As a Laker fan, I think it's honestly kind of hilarious at the worst, but – it just seems like the Lakers have been presented with this whole problem of we need to rebuild, but we still need to sell to our fans this idea that we're trying to, quote, compete. But
okay, and you know why? This is the thing, Alex. Check this out. A big part of the reason why the Lakers have been so successful and they don't give a damn about paying Kobe that $25 million right now, $24 million, is because they have that their own cable deal, right? So
of course, that
deal. Yeah, that Time Warner deal pays them so much money that, yes, they're raking it in hand over fist, so they'll keep Kobe around as long as he wants for the simple fact that Time Warner and sponsors want Kobe on that team and wants him on the floor. So this year, I'm telling you right now, it's a wash. You guys will get minutes. D'Angelo Russell, Julius Randle will get minutes. And hopefully, honestly, I want to be a new coach in there sooner or later. Because I think Byron Scott, he's what I call a secret tank coach because he's not a very good coach.
No, he's not.
But the main thing right now is getting those two guys minutes. You have a full season of games that won't matter. So guess what? They're going to get plenty of minutes. Lou Will, I don't know. I guess it's still Los Angeles. They still like to get a name. So he's the name. Nick Young, they couldn't find anybody to take him. So he's on the roster. So I think I'm looking forward to some very entertaining games. I'm looking forward to the game where, let's say, Lou Will, Nick Young, and Kobe all catch fire all at once. It can happen. And D'Angelo Russell just finding these guys all over the floor. So I think you just sit back and enjoy it. Again, that the cap spike's going to happen, and that $7 million for Lou Williams will be nothing. It'll be a pittance. So just, first year, don't expect too much out of D'Angelo Russell. Rookies usually aren't very good. Just enjoy the hell out of your boy. What's your other kid's name? The other point guard. What's wrong with me right now?
Clarkson.
I love the kid. So I think he's going to be a lot of fun this year. Don't stress too much. We know Kobe, honestly, will probably, you know, be injured, missing games. There's plenty of minutes to go around on the wings for their guys. So,
you know, I think this is funny. Alex, I'm with you. I think it was a really weird move. I would love, just for entertainment's sake, to see D'Angelo Russell, a point guard, Lou Williams, a shooting guard, Nick Young, a small forward, Kobe playing stretch four, and Hibbert, just for the epicness of that ball movement around the perimeter. it would be a scene. You got to know, I've seen Alex. I talked to Alex on Twitter. This is a guy who tweeted me saying, as a Lakers fan, I want nothing to do with LaMarcus Aldridge. So I just wanted to ask, now that you had several meetings, a date, a walk by candlelight, and it didn't happen, do you still feel that way, or would you take LaMarcus Aldridge now that he's in San Antonio?
Oh, absolutely. I still feel that way. As long as you've known me, I've been on the boat that the Lakers have been needing to kind of blow this thing up and truly do a rebuild, but it's really hard to do that with the Hollywood lights of L.A. and the expectations of fans and the history and the legacy of the Laker franchise. I understand that's almost an impossible mission to do, to sell your fans that we're really blowing it up. I mean, not to the extent that Philadelphia has done, obviously, but and at the same time, I'll give them credit that they've done a good job adding some young pieces to the mix that can truly be cornerstones to this franchise for the long run if they develop the right way. But at the same time, I think that they've done some really mind-baffling moves. LaMarcus Aldridge, signing him, to me, would have put a very small Band-Aid on the rebuild. And to me, it's just allocated finances that could have gone elsewhere. And I personally, you guys had mentioned this earlier in the show, I was all about throwing a max contract at Tobias Harris. That's who I really wanted as a Lakers fan. Because I think, potentially speaking, a Russell Clarkson, Harris, Randall quartet moving forward could have been something extremely fun to watch. And watching them develop together would have been great. Versus LaMarcus Aldridge, who's, 31 years old by the end of the summer? I mean, yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge would have put seats in, would have put fans, you know, would have given Laker fans false expectations at a title. I mean, I think it's just absolutely hilarious hearing some Laker fans who will also say that the Lakers have a chance at the 8th seed. I don't think that's even close to plausible. Adding LaMarcus Aldridge to the mix would have just put expectations in a whole new realm of just delusion. And I'm not about that. I'm stuck in reality.
So I got a question.
I
got a question for both of you. And Will Reeve, who was on the podcast earlier tonight, the first half hour of the segment, we did some back and forth, mentioned that he saw a story saying that Love didn't even get a meeting with the Lakers, didn't even give the Lakers a meeting because he felt like they prioritized LaMarcus Aldridge. Which player would you rather have for the next 5 years? Snotty, I'll start with you, and then I'll go to Alex. But who would you rather have for the next 5 years? Kevin Love at, 25 years old, or LaMarcus Aldridge that's going to be 30?
Next 5 years. I guess I have to say Love. I think LaMarcus is more the authentic star player. I think he can do just a little bit more. He doesn't have the range, but I like him better, especially as a rim protector. He's not some great shot blocker, but he uses his frame very well around the rim. He's a little more nimble. But I have to say Love for the age. The age and the floor spacing. While he can't do as much as LaMarcus, I think if he's better suited to be a second option. And so for the next 5 years, I could slot him beside somebody else and have him do his thing. I'd rather than depend on LaMarcus in the last 2 years at 34 and 35 to eat up my possessions. So I'm going to go Love. You know, I think LaMarcus is a better player right now.
What about you, Alex?
Jeez, that's such a Love, I would probably have to say Love due to age, but I mean honestly neither option to me is really optimal if I'm being completely honest. I know I may sound crazy in that regard, but I mean I'm not a fan of either of them for the Lakers moving forward. And that's because I really want to see Randall get the minutes and develop. I mean, can Randall be anywhere near the player that either of them are? We don't know that, you know, and more than likely, who knows if he even gets, you know, touches the surface of, you know, either their player. But if I have to stick to this question, then I'm going to go with Love by just a hair because of the age. I still love Love's passing ability and his ability to trigger the fast break. And with guards like Russell and Clarkson, who can get out there and run. I mean, I would love to see some of those outlet passes that we saw him able to produce at UCLA and get that running gun going.
I think it's interesting. I would have taken Love in a heartbeat. I think he's younger. I haven't forgotten Love's 25 and 12 season in Minnesota. People say those were empty numbers, but those were incredibly impressive numbers on a bad team, whatever. Those are all-star
record.
Numbers.
Yeah,
but
on that
yes.
team's record. Look how he played.
The team wasn't good. The team wasn't good, and it still isn't good. But Love leaves, and they're a worse team. No one's arguing, you know, 14 games or whatever it was, but they're a worse team. I think that people are underrating Kevin Love. I think it's the same thing with DeMarcus Cousins. If DeMarcus Cousins was on a good team, his numbers would shrink. But you can see how he could be the guy on a team if he had the right pieces around him, at least in my opinion.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think Russell and Clarkson and Love would be really fun to watch moving forward, you know, if that was a potential trio. I think they could all play off each other really beautifully. But with Randall in the mix, my heart's kind of set on the whole idea of watching those three kind of blossom together, and I'm hoping they blossom, you know? And so that was another issue with the Lakers' pursuit of LaMarcus Aldridge this summer was just, you know, you have three young pieces that hopefully can become cornerstones to your franchise at the point guard, shooting guard, and power forward position. Let's add compliments to that. I mean, I knew we weren't going to send LaMarcus Aldridge to play center. I mean, he's been pretty vocal about not playing center. So, to me, it was a fruitless chase. Like, there wasn't going to be anything good that happened from that. Except for us getting embarrassed. Except for the Lakers getting embarrassed, really, which is really what happened.
It's not anything bad. Okay, go ahead. Go ahead on the question.
It seems like San Antonio, Golden State, you could possibly throw in the Clippers and throw in Houston in the West. But if you guys were to put a wild card team in the West that can maybe become title contenders next year, despite, you know, the West being what it looks like right now, who would you guys put your money on? Eliminating those top four teams. And let's eliminate Memphis, which makes it even more ridiculous. But what team, 6-8 seed in the West, do you think can maybe make some real noise?
I'm thinking. 6-8 seed. Dallas is going to miss. You know what? Phoenix might make – they're going to get some mascara, I think. I really like what Phoenix did. Adding – what's the guy's name from Jersey?
Tyson Chandler.
From Jersey. Mirza Teletovic.
Yeah.
That's a sneaky move right there. Him and Tyson Chandler are going to change the complexion of that team. I think it was good to break up the Morris twins, at least for this season. Let's hope that Marquise doesn't pout too much. They added they got those two young guys, T.J. Warren and Archie Goodwin, on the wings. Bledsoe's going to be a year better and a year more refined. I think Brandon Knight's going to be healthy. They're going to – I'm going to say Phoenix. I think – I'm going to say this. Either Phoenix gets it together and makes a really – strong playoff push, and even when they get there, a nice showing, or they might need to blow it up because I don't think they thought too much about personality when they put this team together. But I like what Phoenix did. I know Utah is the pick a lot of people are going to use. I like them, but I still think they're so young that while they might make a low-level playoff push and they'll be fun, I don't know if they have the scoring quite yet. So I'm going to go with that. Phoenix.
You know, I'm not a big fan of how Phoenix is put together. They got a lot of talent. They've added some pieces. They made some good moves this offseason, but it always seems like a forced fit to me. It doesn't – people don't – you know, you jam the drawer in, you break some – yeah, you know, there's a lot of force there, but I don't think it's going to click. I'm going to say New Orleans. This is a team that made it last year that has one of, if not the best player period in the NBA. It's going to be a year older. They were also hurt. They lost a lot of guys for a lot of minutes. I think Drew Holiday is a nice guy. He's kind of forgotten. Nice player if he stays on the court. Tyreke Evans finally came around a bit last year. Eric Gordon's playing for money this year. This is a team I think that could cause some noise. I think they got a little bit of playoff experience now. That would probably be – the Pelicans would be my pick.
Nice. Yeah, I've taken both Phoenix and New Orleans as kind of my secretly – Route 4 teams. I just hate that Omer Asik deal. I mean, I just absolutely appall that deal. But, I mean, can't go wrong with Anthony Davis right now. So that's going to be real exciting to watch next year, that Pelicans team. I think just to see this kid, just to see him continue to grow. I mean, how much better can he really get? That's the question that I want to see answered.
My concern about the Pelicans is that they're basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, they're just basically coming back as is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's my one concern. What's that?
They're coming back as is, but they weren't a whole team. That team wasn't running. They didn't have all their guys healthy, and now you've got Davis another year older. But, yes, you're right.
Yeah, that's my issue because, I mean, look at San Antonio just did. They just really upgraded. OKC's getting back. The prohibitive reigning MVP from 2014 because he didn't get to really defend his title. So he's coming back. It should be 100%. And they, you know, had cancer while he was out. So I think they made a major upgrade this summer, right? They went from not having him to end the year to having KD. So, yeah, I like it that they're coming back for continuity's sake, but they didn't really upgrade around the margins, the edges. They didn't add anything they should have added, I think, so.
Well, thanks for coming on, Alex. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Very well spoken. Very well spoken for a guy that didn't want LaMarcus Aldridge in L.A. I don't know. Go get him, Twitter. where can we find you on Twitter, Alex?
King Alex with three X's, A-N-D-R-E. So King Alex, three X's, A-N-D-R-E.
Hey, Alex, make sure you hit me on Twitter after this, and I'll tweet out your link, your at name for everybody.
Absolutely, thank you, man. You guys have a good night.
All right,
and, I'll keep on listening.
Hi,
and take care.
Yes, sir.
That was Alex, a logical Laker fan. They do exist. I don't know if you agree with his logic, but there's a few of them out there. We're gonna run to a break, and I think we'll come back maybe one more caller tonight, and then I'm pretty burnt.
When the world's greatest athlete, Michael Jordan, teams up with the world's best-loved cartoon character, Bugs Bunny, you won't believe your eyes.
Pardon me, Mr. Jordan. Could I have your your John Hancock?
What's going on here?
We need your help!
You heard of the Dream Team? Well, we're the Mean Team.
Ready?
Yeah!
Doc.
Yes.
You kick it in here. You go to the hole and dominate. We own defense.
Oh, yeah.
Whoa. I don't play defense.
Warner Brothers presents Jordan.
Look.
Bunny.
Special delivery.
Together, they just might save the world. Space Jam. You've never seen anything like it.
Mwah!
All right, we're back. We are almost done with our listener takes tonight. I appreciate everyone who called in. Those of you still listening live, God bless. It's been a long show. There's been some crazy things said. Snotty wasn't even the sole culprit tonight, so that's interesting. We're going to do one more. We're actually not going to take another call. Thank you for everyone who called in. Sorry if I missed you. We will do this again in a couple weeks. We had someone following us all night. His at name is at half a mil for bail. Interesting at name. Asked us, said he can't call in, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on Ainge. I think he's a bum and Celtics fans are insane. Snotty, this is handcrafted for you, I think, so why don't you take the wheel?
All right, well, I'm going to try to be the, you know, we had my man Alex, the logical Lakers fan. I'm going to try to be a logical Celtics fan. I wasn't happy at all with our drafts. I wasn't happy with the way a lot of things went this season. But guess what? You can't do anything about it now, right? So moving forward, watch Summer League. Our guys right now, they look actually, you know, they're pretty good. And that's the problem, though. That's the problem right now. I'm starting to doubt Danny Ainge's talent evaluation skills because we have a roster full of guys who are pretty good. They're flawed, but they're all pretty good. They're not players that you'd build around other than Marcus Smart, who I'm very high on. And I think a lot of people agree with me, too. I think he showed flashes so far in the Summer League. But right now our roster is full of guys who are pretty good. Some would be rotation players on a good team. Some would be rotation players on a bad team.
couple guys would even be rotation players on contenders, but for the most part, they're just, when I say rotation players, I mean bench guys. They're just pretty good. I think Ainge had a very good plan. I don't know why I feel like this. I feel that when we had that little push in the season, he deviated from his plan. That started this whole chain of events where he ended up offering 6 picks to move up, you know, or however many picks to move up a few spots and grab Justice Winslow. So, looking back at some of the other picks, too, Fab Melo, I think with Juwan Johnson, whoever, I don't know about his talent evaluation. I don't know if I really trust it. I think his plan originally was very good. He's got a lot of assets for KG and Pierce, but he's not an idiot. Obviously, he's not an idiot. He got to the point where he was fleecing guys in trades left and right. But I don't know, and I guess we'll see after this year. I'm gonna give as much time as he wants. Obviously, I can't do anything about it. But I'm starting, you know, that the plan kind of started to wobble a little bit, and the more it wobbles, the bigger circles it makes. We'll see if this all falls down, if we keep making the eighth seed and we end up on the treadmill. So, what do you think?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but the pipe dream for all the Celtics fans right now is that maybe if we just keep collecting these pieces and we're patient, we're gonna land our James Harden. Correct? That's what, you know, you're hoping for?
That is not what I'm hoping for, but yes, that has been bandied about.
I don't think that's going to happen. I think everybody's caught up in analytics. I think everybody's got their own analytics department. Harden was someone that a lot of guys were looking on the bench saying, like, look at this guy's numbers. Look at his per 36. Look at his per 100 possessions. This is a guy that people looked at, and he was going to be a stud, and everybody knew it. And you got the right situation where Oklahoma's ownership didn't really want to pay the big bucks. It was a perfect storm. I don't think the Celtics are going to do that. I think the Celtics and the Mavericks are in very similar positions in that neither of them is really going to be competitive, but I'd rather be the Celtics because at least their guys are young and you always have a puncher's chance with a bunch of young guys. Maybe you hit on one of the later draft picks. I don't know. Dallas doesn't even have draft picks, so you got me there.
I mean, problem with this whole look what they do with Harden. I mean, that, like you just said, it's a perfect storm. You have to have a young guy who wants out of a situation, a young guy who has the potential to be an MVP, who somehow nobody else really sees, and his team doesn't want to pay him the max money. You know, and there's too many other attractive options right now, right? If somebody had a player like that right now, he can go to L.A. L.A. has max space. Dallas has max space. So it wouldn't be, hey, we can send you to Boston. If he doesn't want to go to Boston, guess what? He won't go to Boston. So, who knows? I will admit, I'm softening on Rozier. I watched him today. The kid's fun. They're fun. We're going to be a lot of fun to watch. It won't be fun when we're at the 7-18 game. I keep kicked in again by Cleveland or Washington, but they're fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a process. It's always a process. Thank you for coming on, Stant. Thank you for being my co-pilot. Is there anything you want to say to all the listeners tonight, everybody that came on, gave us their takes, their questions?
Yeah, man, I really appreciate it, fellas. Thanks for coming on. And how often are we going to do this, man? I like this.
Yeah, I think it was good. I like the interview format. I like to really dive into stuff with someone. But I think we should definitely get together. I'd say like once a month we do an hour, hour and a half of listener takes, get you guys on the show because you really do. You're the reason we do this, and we appreciate you guys chiming in as always, listening as always. I think that's it. We're going to wrap it up.
Let's do it.
Thank you again. At Snotty Drippin, at Josh Eberly. If you're listening to this show, you probably know where we are. But if you're not following us, we will always talk basketball. We are on Twitter 24/7. It's a borderline disease. Thank you, everyone. Have a great night. See you next week.
I'm all about good, wholesome fun.